Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? Happy New Year to you. And glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM. Of course, you can hear us from anywhere online at wliw.org/radio. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com, and it's spelled A-N-N-L-I-G-U-O-R-I.com. And distributed on podcasts via Audio Boom and iTunes. And if you are a history and sports buff, you can now view many of my classic sports interview TV shows on my website at annliguori.com. You can go to the archive section and then the sports interview TV shows area. And if you're interested in watching my conversations with everyone from Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, Hank Aaron, Jim Brown, Nolan Ryan, Dusty Baker, Billie Jean King, Annika Sorenstam, you name it, there will be an interesting interview with a sports legend that you will enjoy watching, I promise. So check that out. And well, over the holiday break, the sports world lost an icon in John Madden. And as you know, Madden coached the Oakland Raiders for 10 seasons from 1969 to 1978. He guided them to a Super Bowl victory in 1977. And after his football coaching career, he brought that down-to-earth, fun personality of his to every football broadcast he did as a color commentator. He won 16 Emmy Awards. He also lent his name and expertise and was the color commentator for the John Madden football video game series. And he was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame back in 2006. Well, in 2000, I had the opportunity to interview John Madden on his Madden Cruiser. Now, John disliked flying, so he rode from game to game across the United States in his Madden Cruiser, which was this incredible ultra-luxury bus. And some of the interview was taped on this bus, and another portion of the interview I did at his celebrity golf tournament in California that year. And what you will hear in this interview is Madden being Madden. Completely open, honest, funny. I think you'll hear some surprising admissions from him as well. I mean, he was brutally honest. He talked a lot about what he thought of the media and commentators while he was the football coach of the Raiders. And he talks a lot about his golf game and people he beat on the course. And the one time that he looked back when he was in the broadcast booth, the one time he thought, well, maybe I do miss coaching and I should go back to coaching. He shares that experience in this special edition of Sports Interview. Another fun experience that a bunch of us girls had in sports media was when John Madden lent us his Madden Cruiser, and about 20 women went on this pub crawl in Manhattan in the Madden Cruiser. And we ended up at a restaurant on the Upper East Side, and all of us filed out of the bus, and a lot of the guys who were in the bar restaurant came out to see the bus, and they looked really disappointed when John Madden was not on the bus with us. You know, they were really looking forward to meeting John Madden himself. So that was fun. The actual night started at the Dakota, the famous apartment building residence that John lived in on the West Side. John Lennon lived there as well years before. But what a special memory. And it was so kind of John to let us use his bus for that evening of fun. Rest in peace, John Madden. You were a pleasure to spend time with and truly a gift to football. Well, in the first half of the show, you will hear my conversation with Rob LaBritz. Many of you golfers know Rob. He's the director of golf at Glen Arbor in Bedford, New York. He's also an amazing golfer, and he recently won a championship that qualifies him to play the Champions Tour, the 50 and over circuit for professional guys, full time. So it's quite an achievement, and it was a lifelong dream of his. And we'll take you on his journey and have a discussion with Rob LaBritz about his dream come true. That's all coming up in this edition of Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.
Welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Rob LaBritz, the director of golf at Glen Arbor Golf Club in Bedford Hills, New York, and a full-fledged member of the Champion Tour. Congratulations, Rob. I was pulling for you. I always pull for you. And it's always like, I feel like I'm sending congratulations notes to you all the time. And now this, what a great achievement. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a bunch of years in the making, and, you know, we're actually sitting here. It's a few weeks past that qualifier, and my stomach is finally settled, and I feel like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders.
So you've been a lifelong club professional. Have you always had this dream to play on the tours?
I have always had the dream. Playing in all those majors that I have, obviously you get that taste for it and you get to be Mick Jagger for a week, but the fire has never left me. But the job is a consuming job. So, I'm always around the game, which makes me happy, but the underbelly of the competition has always been there. And the Metropolitan PGA has great events that we play in year round, or, you know, all during our spring, summer, fall. And then the PGA of America has a great winter program. So, as far as satisfying the hunger of playing golf, you know, I have that. Now I get to do it at just a little bit higher of a level and really pumped to get in there.
So you won the final stage of the PGA Tour Champions qualifying tournament by 3 shots, shooting, what, a 64 in the final round?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I've been asked a few times in some interviews now, is that the round of your life? And I have to say, yes. I mean, I think I have 7 course records. 62 is my lowest, but, you know, to the night before the final round, you know, I saw a lot of things flashing before my brain, you know, very emotional, you know, knowing that I was in this spot and I could actually get the job done. I reached out to a bunch of people and got some great advice and, you know, went out there, talked to the man upstairs, and he, you know, we bogey free 64. So, you know, here we go. Get to play with the likes of Mickelson and Couples and Watson, and just can't wait to get out there.
It's so great. So, gosh, a 64. Well, first of all, before you take us through that round, who did you reach out to, and what kind of advice did they impart on you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I reached out to a lot of people. I was pretty emotional, you know, going into that final round. I reached out to my coaches, Tom Wilson, Bill Davis, Carl Alexander. And then also reached out to a few people that I met a few weeks prior. One person in particular gave me some great advice, Brandel Chamblee. And then, I've been friends with Rich Beam for a long time, so I reached out to him. And then Jim Herman as well. And all the guys, you know, just said the same thing. Keep that smile on your face. You're good enough. Go ahead, get the job done. And then I reached out to my son and Matthias, and he is actually the one who said, you know, Dad, you've been playing with me since we've been 3 years old. He goes, you know, you're destined to do this. Just go out there, smile, have a great time. And my wife probably gave me the best advice. Carrie, she's awesome. She's such a supportive. She's my right hand. She's awesome. She's like, she's my yin of my yang. She told me one thing. She goes, I know how you like to go out there and talk to people and just, you know, you're a very social person. She goes, I just want you this one round. She goes, smile. She goes, put your head down and just don't get distracted and get the job done. And she goes, and then your reach will be to whoever you want. And that was the probably the real piece that kind of put me over the edge, because I continued to smile out there. But, you know, there was a lot of people out there following us, and I just kind of kept my head down and did what she asked, and it worked out great.
That's great advice from your wife, because she knows you better than anybody. And you probably, as a director of golf and, you know, lifelong club professional, you're always entertaining, you're always being social, you always want to give of yourself, but this was all about your focus and your concentration and getting the job done. And it's hard to do that when you're trying to entertain everybody or be nice to everybody.
100%. And to be honest with you, I've gotten pretty good at it. I can do that, but there's still a level of focus that needs to be maintained. You know, she opened up a new door for me. So I'm going to channel what she gave me that final round and bring it into the other tournaments that I play in.
So talk about that final round. You were at Tampa, right? At the TPC course in Tampa, Florida?
Yep, TBC Tampa Bay. It was great starting out the week, actually. We got there, and an old, super old friend of mine, Steve Ostroff, is now the GM there. Didn't know that until I got there. It was nice to see him. I haven't seen him in about 24 years. We used to play the Golden Bear Tour together and Montgomery Tour back in the 90s. And, you know, just he was really excited. It was kind of connecting with an old friend, which was awesome. And then, you know, all the support that poured out, you know, that week, you know, there's a two people that came out that they did in Buckhorn Springs in my first round. The Adcocks came out, who I met at Buckhorn. They said some nice things to me, and they showed up again on the final day of the final round, and said some nice things to me. And you know, I've been talking to the man upstairs a lot more, just to kind of, you know, solidify. And, you know, there's just so much support. I want to do everything right. And, you know, and just, it was just one of those great rounds where all the support, I could feel it. I was super nervous, super nervous. I mean, I can't tell you, my stomach was in knots. I could hardly eat. I was choking food down just to get, you know, the energy in you. And, but I competed under those nerves and came out pretty solid. So very happy with the outcome.
So the 18th hole, if I remember correctly, it's pretty long. There's water on the right, bunkers on the left. What was going through your mind as you teed it up on the 18th to try to close this out?
Yeah, So the whole day I knew I was playing well, and I never know how many under or over par I am. Hopefully I'm under par, but I try to focus on one shot at a time. So I turned to my caddy, Todd Luigi, on 16, and I said to him, I said, where do we stand? I didn't know, honestly. And he said, you're 17 under. And I said, are you sure? And he goes, yeah. He goes, Rob, you're 7 under today. And I was like, wow. So, you know, I said, okay, so what's fifth place? And I think he thought I said something else. He said, you've got 3 shots. And I was like, oh my gosh, 3 shots to fifth place. I said, I better, you know, grin and bear. He goes, no, you got a 3-shot lead. He goes, you know, the fifth place is like 8 or 9 under. And I was standing on that 16th tee at 17 under. And again, a calmness came over me, where I just, you know, said, okay, you can just hit quality golf shots like you've been doing the last 4 days or 3 days. And I did. And I had great playing partners too, with David Branshaw and Tung Chai JD, super supportive. We're all rooting for each other when we're out there. You know, we want each other to play well. We're in the final group. We want all of us to make it. So, you know, as people are making birdies, we're giving each other high fives and stuff. And just, you know, it was a really cool last day, to be honest.
So are you telling me that you really never are aware of your standing on the leaderboard, or just this particular day when you were just so focused and, you know, just in the zone that you didn't know?
Yeah, there were no leaderboards out here. So you had to look on your phone. And my phone stays in the bag. I don't, when I'm on the golf course, I don't ever answer my phone. But I asked Todd to just make sure he knew when I asked him, you know, where we stood, and he kind of had his phone in his pocket. But if there's leaderboards, I know. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't change my game plan at all. Although if you're a couple behind, it might make you a little more aggressive. But, you know, I found over the years that, you know, if you just kind of play and not try to be aggressive or try to be passive or just try to, you know, if you just play your game, that's the best recipe. You can't really try to do other things, you know, knock it close, a putt, try to get it close. You're always trying to make putts. So, you know, for me, it was just, it was a sort of relief that I knew that I was there, you know, so I was there, I had shots to spare. Thank goodness I didn't spare him. I'm coming down the line, which is great, but it was great.
So how long have you been dreaming of qualifying for the Champions Tour?
So I left playing full time in the Canadian Tour in 2005, I believe, and went through a divorce a few years later, and I had a child. But when I left that Canadian Tour in 2005, I became a club pro, you know, director of golf again. But the deep down, I just kind of pushed that playing full time guy sort of down, and I became a coach and a mentor and a director of golf and helped running a business. And, you know, did all that, but in the grand scheme of things, I still kept my game sharp. I still worked out. I still, you know, practiced every day. I don't let a day really go by, because deep down I knew I wanted to give the Champions Tour a shot when I turned 50. And, my son Matthias was my only child at the time before I got married again. He was going to be 18 when I turned 50. So he had been off at school. So it was like a perfect little scenario. Now, granted, I got remarried and I have two beautiful daughters, but my wife is 100% supportive of everything that we do. She is my rock and my yin of my yang. And, you know, she's just there, you know, cheerleading and taking care of all the stuff at home so I can go ahead and just, you know, play some good golf. So it's been in the makings, I'd have to say, you know, since I left playing full time in 06.
So what's it going to be like, Rob, juggling your schedule as the director of golf at Glen Arbor and playing enough so you can really compete, you know, on this level, the champions level?
Yeah. So, you know, I plan on obviously keeping my job, but the one thing, the job that I do want to keep is the one that I was just given, which is the playing guy. I always wanted to balance and merge the PGA Tour or the PGA Champions Tour with the PGA of America. I always felt that there was that sort of the side of the business was lacking. It was either like you were a club professional or you were a touring professional. And I always believed that, you know, everybody told me you can't do both. You can't do both. You can't do both. And I've heard this my whole life. You can't do both. Now, I never played on the PGA Tour. I played a few events, but you can do both if you just have this vision and you still set aside time to get it done. I'd love to talk to the PGA of America and see what type of classification they're going to give me. I know I'm still going to be doing the job. And my off weeks, I'll be going to meetings. I'll be seeing my members. I'll be playing with my members. I'll still be coaching. So, you know, we're going to navigate some waters that I don't think a lot of people have done. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what opportunities we can open up for other PGA pros and other apprentices that are coming up, you know, that aren't 50 yet that want to have this dream. So if I can help in any way or pave the way in any way, I'm all for it because, you know, change is good, especially when it's when you get an opportunity to really get your dreams fulfilled. So
how will you do it? You're in New York and then you'll go to Florida to train and practice and then you'll be on the road. There are a lot of tournaments on the Champions Tour.
Yeah. So I'll be on the road a good amount. I think there's 25 events that I've qualified for already. And then also the, hopefully I'll qualify for the other ones by position on the money list and finishes in the first few events. But on my off weeks, you know, we still have our house up here through April of 2023. My daughter's in third grade. And my 11-month-old hasn't started yet, but we want to keep her in school until the season, you know, her year finishes. And then I'd love to have my wife and two daughters come out on the tour with me to experience it. And we plan on just grinding away and working our tails off to get some wins out there and go finally play in that Charles Schwab Cup.
Do you feel you're a better player now than ever? Or were you like this, say, maybe 10 years ago, but you know, it just didn't happen where to qualify for any.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. You know, I always had to, you know, the job was always in the forefront. So, time was always, you know, the extra time that I had was able to put into my golf game. So now I'm going to actually have time to put in my golf game. But to be honest with you, you know, the last few weeks, I played in the senior club pro. I played pretty solid there. I finished sixth. I had a tough last round because I walked all four rounds, which actually would have got me right into finals, which was a blessing that I didn't get into finals. I missed by a shot, which put me into that first stage. First stage gave me a ton of confidence just to see the talent level out there and play with the guys. And then final stage gave me more confidence to know that I can compete under pressure and just, you know, just get the job done. I feel like I'm a much more complete golfer. I know I'm working on the correct things. My short game takes up the bulk of my practice. I'm a very good ball striker and I'll keep my body in great shape so I can compete. So I'm definitely, and mentally, I'm just a better person. I'm in a better stage in my life. I'm very settled. I'm confident. I've got a great group of friends and teammates around me that just make all this stuff happen. So I'm in a great spot and very, very comfortable right now. So
it's like fine wine, Rob. You get better with age.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think 50 is the new 30 from what I've heard.
Exactly. And you stay in shape. Take us through your routine throughout the week. What do you do physically and mentally to be the best you can be?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, Tuesdays, we usually have off from the club. I usually compete in tournaments Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. If we have a tournament week. So you know, I'm preparing mentally for those, you know, tournaments up to that point. I generally, you know, during the week, I'll check out to see what events I have coming up, which ones I need to prepare for. My book is generally structured around, you know, the tournaments. So my lessons are scheduled, you know, appropriately. The meetings are scheduled appropriately. And then there's time to work on my game. I do a lot of mental focus at night, a lot of visualization at night when things calm down. And sometimes I'm an early riser. So sometimes in the mornings I'll get up and I'll just kind of sit down and close my eyes and get my coffee and just envision the things that I want to do and breathe and just kind of calm myself down. It's funny how you feel anxiety build up. And then when you really get into meditation after the meditation and visualization, all that stuff, you just feel like a weight's been lifted off you. So the breathing part, that's all been extremely helpful to me. And I do that on a daily basis and practice every day and work out every day, whether it be stretching my Peloton, working out my trainers. I just do something every day to keep mobile, limber, and ready to go and ready to compete.
Yeah. Don't you feel the older you get, the more you have to stretch and work out and tone and keep in shape and eat the right foods. It just, you know, doesn't come naturally. It just, you have to really work at all that.
100%. I mean, especially, you know, after the Friday, two Fridays ago, you know, there was a lot of partying going on. There was a lot of wine that hit the system and a lot of crazy foods that hit the system. It was kind of like almost like but you know, after a week or so, you know, I looked at my face in the mirror. I saw some bags under my eyes. I'm like, oh my goodness, we gotta get back on the street now and not drink so many great Napa cabs.
Exactly. So when did you first start playing golf and who was your mentor as far as your own golf playing days?
So I started playing golf when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I grew up on a little country club called Pattonbrook Country Club. It was a little executive golf course in Southington, Connecticut. My dad, he liked to drink a lot. He was, you know, a bit of an alcoholic. So I found his golf clubs in the garage and we literally lived on the golf course. So I would take his golf clubs and just go on the golf course because I didn't want to be in the house. And, you know, I'd hit shots into the 8th hole and the 9th hole and the 18th hole and just really developed a love for the game around that age. I tried baseball for a few years and when I was 9, 10, 11. And there was another, one of my good friends, who's another great golfer, Fast Eddie Fernandez. He won the World Long Drive in 2018. Him and I used to have a whistle for each other. We lived 4 houses down from each other. And we used to meet each other on the first tee and just play against each other constantly. So, you know, I don't think we missed a day until it started to snow. And even when it started to snow, we'd take our clubs out there. We'd throw some spray paint on the golf balls and go play. So we loved it. And he actually was at finals of Champions Tour Q School too, as well. And I know that he'll get his break and play well and get through the qualifier too coming up. But he was my big driving force, you know, Southington, Connecticut. And then my parents moved me down to Hobe Sound, Florida when I was a junior in high school. So I could play year round. And that's when my game started to really get good because, you know, you don't take 4 months or five months off. You just compete all the time. Played the AJGA Tour for a few years, you know, played in the U.S. Junior Amateur and then got a nice scholarship to college. And I only lasted in college a year at Central Connecticut State. We were 18th in Nation Division I. I found it way too easy to skip class and hit golf balls, to be honest with you, which, you know, hindsight, looking back at it, I kind of, you know, I wish I stayed there and finished out my education. And I wouldn't put that on anybody, but, you know, it was my doing, but it worked out okay.
would you say you're more self-taught your golf swing when you were a kid or?
Totally self-taught. There was a guy who helped me out a little bit named Jeff Torrance when I was at Pattonbrook, and he just would come out and give me a tip here or there. But when I moved down to Hobe Sound, Florida, when I was 16 or 17, I started working with a man by the name of Bill Davis, who was the director of golf at Jupiter Hills. And he really taught me sort of how to practice, how to play, the confidence you needed to do. And then, you know, I started working with another gentleman, Tom Wilson, who kind of taught me a little bit more about the golf swing. Worked with him starting in about 2000. I think we met, so we've been together about 21 years, or 99, and he opened up my brain about how to, you know, just swing a golf club, and then between him and Bill, And then now I've worked a lot in the last month or two with a gentleman by the name of Carl Alexander at the Golf Club Purchase. And he's opened up just another new avenue for me for ball control. So, you know, those guys have been, and oh, and David Orr for putting. I worked with David Orr in July of last year. He just, he blew my mind, and I've been putting great ever since. So like big thank you to all those guys.
What did David Orr teach you? Tell me.
So what did he teach me? He taught me, that's my little newest one. He taught me, this is Logan, it's Ann Liguori. He taught me, you know, he kind of fixed my grip a little bit. He gave me some drills to do and just gave me some confidence out there. He told me I was a very good putter already and he wanted to shine up my armor a little bit more. And so we did that. And I've been working on his stuff every day for 10 to 15 minutes a day, which he said, and it's been working out great. And I've been making a lot of putts and I'm not three putting anymore. So things have been working real great. Big shout out to David. So thank you.
That's my New Year's resolution. No more three putting.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to go see him, he will take you away from that three putt action.
I will have to get his contact information. That would be a great idea. That would be your gift to me. A couple more questions, Rob. This Champions Tour. So, gosh, Bernard Langer and Phil Mickelson and, you know, Jay Haas, longtime buddy, all these great players who have this, you know, obviously Phil can still win on the PGA Tour as he did at the PGA Championship at the Ocean Course on Kiawa Island in May. But my goodness, who do you look to on that tour that you probably know most of them, right? I mean, it's just so exciting that you're going to be competing alongside these guys and your scores are so worthy. So, you know, you really do belong.
Thank you. You know, there's not one person out on that Champions Tour. There's not one person. Every one of them I look up to because they were the ones that drove me as I was coming up. I mean, I used to watch Inside the PGA Tour, watch all the events when I was a kid and watch all these guys. So, you know, any person that plays full time for a living and has done just that, I've got the highest regards and respect for, because to be able to just hone your craft and make money on just getting the ball in the hole, it's pretty impressive over a long period of time. All of them, I'm sure, have a wealth of knowledge. And as a PGA professional and now Champions Tour member, I've got two sides to me. I'm a Gemini as well. So I've got a learning side to me and I've got a competitive side to me. And the learning side is going to be like a sponge out there, just getting to know, you know, the travel, the venues, the do's and don'ts. And then the competitive side of me is going to, you know, want to shoot the best scores I can. And I don't care who I'm playing against. Because the bottom line is it's you against the golf course. It's not you against any other player. You've got to play your best on the golf course. And if you do that and you make enough more birdies than bogeys, you'll probably come out with a pretty good paycheck. So, you know, I'm looking forward to learning from every one of those legends out there. I'm blessed to be even considered in the same category or have the same card that they do. It still gives me goosebumps just to think about, to be honest, because, you know, I'm going to get out there and just learn and smile and try to make a ton of birdies.
And you're right, but your mindset has to be like it was on that final round, right? To qualify for the Champions Tour, you know, as far as handling the pressure and expectation, you just have to be in that zone and not worry about everything else going on.
Yeah, no, and you know, that's the good thing about the competitive side of me. I have that. I developed that skill. I can do that. So I'm just going to have to do it a little bit more often this year. Instead of playing in 12 events, I'm going to probably be playing close to 30. Or, you know, 15 events, probably close to 30. So, you know, taking my time, I've learned to walk slower. I've learned to look around a lot more, just enjoy it. I feel like we've said, I feel like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders. I feel so proud and confident to be a PGA professional. And I hope I can just, you know, lift all the other PGA pros that want to do this and give them some inspiration and just to never give up on their dreams, because, you know, with the right sort of attitude and visualization and game, you know, you can do this and just never give up, because the mind is a powerful thing. It's a super powerful thing. And the more that I visualize, the more that I understand this.
Rob, what has golf taught you that you carry over to life?
Well, so, I mean, everything that I have is due to the game of golf. Everything. I mean, there's not one thing that hasn't been brought to me by the game of golf. Respect the game. Respect yourself. There's, I guess the one thing is never do anything wrong, because there's always, there's an up to a down. If there's something that you do wrong, or if you, you know, take advantage of something somewhere, there's going to be a dip in that equilibrium, so to speak. So, you know, be thankful. And just, you know, I guess it's just, that's a really good question. You know, it's really all about you out there, and just surrounding yourself with a great team and great people, and having a vision. You know, the game of golf is so sacred, so special to me. I just hope I can play it until I can't play it anymore.
Golf is such a microcosm of life, and everything you just said, I'm sure you carry over to your day-to-day life.
100% hard work, dedication, never giving up, you know, getting people excited about the game. One of the things that I love so much is all my students is I get them excited about the game. I get them better. So they're playing better golf. And when they're playing better golf, their families are happier. They're going home happy. Their friends, they just, you know, it's like this, you know, it's like a fuse. As you light the fuse, it just kind of travels to everything. So, yeah, just a blessed guy, man. And I, you know.
I love your energy and your happiness and the joy. It's just written all over your face, and your passion to be the best you can be, not only as a player, but as an instructor and everything you do. Recently, the PNC Championships, Tiger and Charlie Woods, and all these other great pairings with John Daly and his son winning. What were your thoughts when you saw Tiger out there? And boy, was I impressed with Charlie for the second straight year. That he's just, he performed so well under pressure for a 12-year-old.
I mean, first of all, just to see Tiger out there hitting 300-yard drives, OMG. I mean, you know, this just goes to show, and I know Joe LaCava, and I've been pestering Joe for the past 3 or 4 years, ever since I've qualified for PGA, so I just want to play around with Tiger. Just want to play around with Tiger. So I'm going to keep pestering Joe to play around with Tiger. I would love to do that. You know, when you have a child like Tiger does, and he instills those, you know, Tiger's, him and Nicholas, the two best players that ever play the game, right? Record wise, you know, to see him giving Charlie, you know, his wisdom and just, you know, I mean, just what he can do with the game. I mean, this kid's something special. Obviously he's got great DNA, and then on top of it, you know, he's got one of the best players as a dad on the planet. But to see them all out there happy and spending time with their families, it reminds me to do the same thing with my son, Matthias, and my daughter, Ryan, you know, to watch little John Daly. I mean, here's a kid, he's made it vocal that he wants to go play the PGA Tour. I have no doubt in my mind that this kid's going to go play the PGA Tour. He's already saying it. He's not even in college yet. That's going to be his focus. He's going to do it. He's already got the game, you know. All these other kids too, come, I mean, watching Charlie's 12. I mean, he's making putts. He's flipping Tiger his court. I mean, he seems so comfortable out there. I watched a great interview with Carl and Henrik Stenson. That was really cool to see the personalities that the kids take that are just like their fathers. It's really cool, you know? It's awesome. It's awesome to see. I was kind of glued to the television for a few hours to watch this, and it's got to see Tiger and Charlie almost win. Not to take anything away from John and you know, little John Daly, but wow, what some great golf out there.
Well, continued success. You've always been a rock star in my book, and now it just went to a whole new level with your, you know, qualification for the Champions Tour. And I can't wait to see you up there. You have to come on my Talking Golf show on WFAN, and we'll continue following you, Rob. Really, I'm so happy for you, and continued success.
And thank you very much. Enjoy your show. Listen to it all the time. Continued success to you too. And I look forward to our next adventure.
That's what it is. Life's an adventure. Just embrace it as you do. You're an inspiration, Rob. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ann. Pleasure to be on with you.
Hi, I'm Ann LaGorie. Welcome to Sports Interview. We are here with John Madden at the Ruby Hill Country Club at the Outback Celebrity Golf Tournament. How are you, John?
Very well.
The bus is parked
in front. The Outback Madden Cruiser is parked in front. And you have been working with Outback for about 6 years now.
Yeah. We've been, it's been a great association. You know, I've been with, they sponsor my bus and they're on, the paint job and the whole thing.
It's a bright
on the bus.
Paint job, to say the least.
But, like I tell people if they don't like it, then they're too old. it's a young thing. So I get all the guys, and I said, this is young happening, and so young people like it.
Sure.
So then you say, how do you like it? Of course. Oh, I love it. they love those colors. Outback is such a great company. I think it has to be when you ride around the country and you have someone's name on the place that you ride and you live, it better be. It better be good. And the product is so great. I've been with Outback now for over 6 years, and I've never, ever once had a bad word said about Outback. I've never had anyone come up and say, geez, I got a bad meal, or this happened, or that happened, or bad service, and that's important.
It's so great to see you. I met you for the first time last night at the Outback Steakhouse restaurant at the party, and it's like we've known each other for so many years, and I was thinking, that is probably one of your strongest qualities. You're just so down to earth, and it's like we've known each other forever. You like that on TV too. That comes across in your announcing.
Well, it's something that I really don't think about. I mean, I really feel that that I've been lucky. I've really never worked a day in my life. I mean, I went from playing to coaching to broadcasting, and I've always been the same guy. I mean, I'm no different than the guy that I was in a junior in high school. And one of the things when I do something, I don't look at it. And that's, I don't know if that's right or wrong, or you should even say that. But when I do a game, or I never look at the tape of it, because I figure if you're supposed to be yourself and you are yourself, and then you don't like it, what do you do? So I figured,
good point.
Yeah, why watch it?
You coached for 10 years, Oakland Raiders, won a Super Bowl. Then decided, I've had enough. You didn't want to coach anymore. How come?
I don't know. When I left coaching, there was no word burnout, and then the word burnout came, and they tried to attach that to me. But that wasn't, I wasn't burned out. I mean, I was the type of guy that, gave everything I had, and I had coached as a head coach for 10 years, and I figured that's all you have in you. And you look at some of these coaches, and, there are the amazing ones. I mean, the Shulas and the Tom Landrys and the Chuck Knowles and those guys that coached for a long time. And then there were guys like me that, maybe Bill Parcells is in that category. Maybe Dick Vermeil is in that category. Maybe Jimmy Johnson, that you just have so much in you, and then you just don't want to do it anymore. And I don't know that it's burnout or not, but I started at 32, so I was retiring at 42 years old. And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I wasn't going to coach anymore. And I just fell into broadcasting. And then when I started that, I loved that. And I said, hey, this is it.
And you never looked back. Never once in the broadcast booth did you look at coaches and say, I really miss that. I really want to be back on the football field coaching. Did you?
I looked back once. I only looked back one time. And it was when Jimmy Johnson was working with us at Fox. He'd left Dallas and had worked at Fox for a couple years, and then went back and was going to coach Miami. And we were at a party in Dallas, and he was so excited about going back, he got me excited about going back. And he was saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I'm saying, yeah, you do this, you can do it, and all this thing, and we're both going on and on. And so I got excited. I said, I'd like to be doing what Jimmy did. I was kind of envious of him. And then I remember walking across the street to my hotel, and I said to myself, I hope this feeling goes away overnight. And
did
I hope
it?
I wake up and it's not the same feeling. It did go away.
Thank goodness.
And I woke up the next day, and I didn't have that feeling anymore. So it did come back for one
just
night.
Just for that one night.
Yeah.
And it was Jimmy Johnson, of all people.
Yeah, of all people.
You can get excited about coaching.
Yeah, and we just both, and one thing led to another, and I said, geez, I'd like to do what he's doing.
How did you feel when you got the call to go do a football game for CBS?
When I first retired, I wanted to spend time with my family. And because when you're a football coach, you work all the time, and you're never home. And so you're being pulled upon. You know, and one side is, I ought to spend time with my family, and the other side, I have to work because I have to win.
Sure.
If you're in coaching, you got to win. There's
Absolutely.
No other thing, and you can't lose, and losing, you know, is so tough. So you get tunnel vision, and you have all this. So anyway, so I said, okay, I gave that part of my life to football. Now I'm going to take time off and devote to my family. Well, I went home, and there was no family there. They don't stay home waiting for you. You know, my kids, you know, they had school, they had
sure.
teams, they had places to go. My wife was independent.
And she was used to you being away.
Yeah, they all were. And so I was sitting home with my dog. I mean, me and my dog boss. And I thought, well, you know, there has to be more to it than that, that spending time with your family is overrated. So I knew I had to do something, and I didn't want to be a broadcaster.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. I turned him down 3 or 4 times because
why?
I really, I don't know. I mean, as a coach, I really didn't respect what they did.
You didn't respect what they were saying about the game, right?
No. I mean, I really didn't respect television. I mean, I thought that, I mean, I was a coach, you know, just coach and the team and everyone else and everything else
right.
is a distraction. Just
right.
stay away. And so I was never television friendly, nor media friendly. And, you know, for a while, I mean, that was, you know, a joke.
Sure.
I never was, and then I get into it. And so I didn't want to do it. And then it came on, and I did. And the first time I did it, I said, this is it. This is what I want to do.
I'm here with Willie Yarborough, who's been driving the Madden bus, the Outback Madden bus, since 1987. How many people can sleep on the bus?
We can sleep about 4.
Right?
4 right now.
You got the TV right here?
Yeah, we got the TV there. We got the VCR right here.
Right. Ah. Oh, you got 2 TVs right here.
Yeah, we got 2 TVs up here. We got 1 back here. This is our kitchen galley area. We have the full-size refrigerator.
I love the tile floors. That's class. Awesome.
We got an oven. We got a stovetop here.
Uh-huh.
Of course, a microwave, coffee
uh-huh.
maker, toaster, blender.
Tortilla chips, very important.
And this is his bedroom back here. So this is where he looks shorter, but it's actually longer than it looks because of the pillow. His pillow's so big. This is his desk area back here.
Right.
Where he comes
right.
and he spends a little time back here when he wants to be by himself. That's an old
okay.
picture of Red Granger.
He has all kinds of football books back
here. He has his own TV back here. He's got his radio. He's got his VCR.
All right.
He's got his tape CD player.
I love it. Well, we have to make sure we get a copy of A Passion for Golf sitting on
yeah.
that desk.
Okay. This is his private bathroom back here.
Ah.
That's a shower. We use it for a closet because we usually stop and get a hotel. We're going to take a shower. We're going to be there. We're going to spend some time. Stop and get off the bus for a while.
Always need additional closet space.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I love it.
He's a great guy to travel with because of the fact that he doesn't make it intense. He's very relaxed. And in fact, the first year I started with him, and one of his first things he said, we're going to have fun. We're a team, we're going to have fun, so let's enjoy it, you know. So there's no special seats, there's no special cups, or you just go and have a good time. The main thing is getting there safely. That's the main thing. We get him there safely, then we know we're there safely.
So how's your golf game?
Not very good.
No?
I mean, I can't. Anyone that is an old lineman is never a good golfer. You know, because, see, in football, you're always taught, you know, keep your head up. You know, you always gotta, you know, keep your head up and hit everything as hard as you can. And then you go to play golf, and they tell you, you know, keep your head down and swing
so
easy.
So it's a complete opposite.
Your football, yeah, an old okay. lineman, you never swung easy at anything, and you never kept your head down. Because if you ever want to get beaten, you get your nose over your toes.
Oh.
You get your head down. And anytime you put your head down, you lose your power. But in golf, you have to keep
complete
your head
opposite.
Down. Yeah, so you can't play.
It's a good excuse.
Well,
same
no,
alignment.
Yeah, I'm a lineman. You never.
What's your handicap? Sit. I was a lineman.
Yeah, I'm a lineman. That's right. And then you know, handicap. So if you ever hear anyone put about in front of their handicap, they're not telling the truth.
That's right.
Yeah, you
know, you're either
the next,
a 15
say, no,
or you're
you
not
are,
a 15.
I mean, your handicap is a number. It's
that's
not
right.
about a number.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anytime, what's your handicap? Well, it's about.
No.
That doesn't work.
Come in. Kick. What did you hit there?
That's the thing with golf. If you're going to be bad, you want to play tennis. Because if you're bad in tennis, it's over quickly. If you're bad in golf, it's just prolonged.
You're right. It's a tough sport to be really bad at, but it's a tough sport to be very good at, and it's the most humbling sport of any sport I've ever played. Yeah. It's the most humbling sport.
And you do stupid things. I mean, there's like, if you take golf, and you know, you wear clothes when you play golf that you wouldn't wear anyplace else. You do things, you know, intelligent people, like, they wouldn't sit down and talk to their golf ball at home. You know, they wouldn't say, well, what do you want to do tonight? Where do you want to go to eat? You want to go right? You want to do this? You want to go for what? You wouldn't talk to them. So they're nuts, and they put them away. They go out in the golf course. They talk to the ball. You know, they do. I mean, someone hit, come out, jump, hit, skip, bite, you know, and the ball doesn't come back. But, I mean, the guy can be smart as heck, and then he'll go out there and talk to his golf ball. And then what's worse than the guy talking to his own golf ball is talking to your golf ball. Like, you ever hit a bad shot? I hate it. When I hit one and it's going in the trees, it's going in a tree, don't even talk about it. Don't say come back. Don't hit a tree. Don't say take a bounce. You know, but they'll all do that.
Just,
you know, just shut up. Just shut up. Then if I really get a bad shot, then I get mad at him. I don't like the ball because you got to blame someone, you know. And so I don't want to look for it. Some people want to go look for your golf balls. I have a say, and I say Fido. And Fido means forget it, drive on.
Uh-oh, that could be good. Come on down. Work for him.
There's only one guy that I really compete with, because I kind of admit that I'm not a good golfer. And so therefore, that's like a disclaimer that I don't have to compete. I mean, I competed in a part of my life, and I'm highly competitive. I mean, I'm competitive to a point that can go overboard. So I didn't want to do that to golf. So I admit that I'm not any good, and I don't play well, and I don't care. That's the thing. I have to get a point that I don't care. I don't care. Now, I lose to Don Shula. Now, I competed against Don Shula all my professional life. And we had great games when he was at Miami and I was at Oakland, and for big games. And so I play him in golf, and it starts off, and I beat him in the first four or five holes, so I think, well, he's not really good. So I let down, and I start telling jokes, and I'm laughing, you know, buddy, and anyway. So he beats me. So I don't think anything of it, because I don't care. So now he pulls out the scorecard at the end. He said, here, will you sign this? I said, for what? He said, because I beat you. And I said, I didn't know we were competing. And so I'm driving home after that, and I thought, I forgot how to compete. I mean, I got to a point in my life that I don't compete anymore. So I chased Don Shula for 2 years. And the harder I tried, I couldn't beat him. And then we'll go down to the last hole.
All right.
A year ago, last summer, I played him on a Saturday, and we broke even. I played him on Sunday and beat him.
Oh, wow.
A year
ago.
First time. So now he says, okay, we'll play tomorrow. I said, okay, call me. This is embarrassing now. So anyway, so I never played him again.
Let's talk a little football. Right? Or we could talk baseball or basketball. Or the Derby, whatever. You like all sports.
Yeah.
But, John, tell me a little bit about Bill Parcells. He's now decided to stay with the Jets. There was some speculation that he would go into the broadcast booth. Do you like to see Bill Parcells as a football coach, or do you think he is? It's time now? He's finished.
Yeah, I think once a guy says he's going to quit, he's already quit, and I think you have to let him go. And I think it was probably a mistake a year ago when Jimmy Johnson tried to quit, and they talked him back into staying another year, and he wanted to quit. And I firmly believe that. If you don't say you're going to quit, if you're not going to quit. Because once you say you're going to quit, you've quit.
When you're in the booth and you really analyze these games, I mean, how do you have to stop yourself from becoming too critical, or do you just say what comes to mind.
Whatever comes to mind, because you're just an observer. And, you know, and sometimes it's how you feel, you know. I mean, you try not to let feelings get into it, like, you know, being cranky if it's one of those days where, you know, I mean, it's like you look at everything rose-colored glasses or kind of mid between rose and plain and or just plain. And there's a lot of ways to look at it because... when I watch a game, I don't watch the monitor. I'm looking at the field. So I see all 22 players. So on any play, there's some good things that happen, and there's some average things that happen, and there's some bad things that happen. Now, if you see an interception, for example, it's easy to say that the quarterback wants that one back. Well, now that, I mean, the ground could say that. I mean, that's not, I mean, no quarterback says, well, that's what I want to do. Give me the ball and I'll do it again. I'll throw it. Of course you don't want to throw an interception. So now you can look at the quarterback. It was a bad play by the quarterback. Or you could look and see that some guy hit him just as he threw and took something off it. Then you can go to the left tackle. And the left tackle didn't have his inside foot up. He put his inside foot back, which gave the inside lane to the defensive end.
So you see all of that.
I see it all.
But what you just choose to talk about.
Right. So now, or the guy that got a jump on the ball that read and came out. So now, that's right. So now you can pick. Now you can say the quarterback. You can say that he was hit. You can go to the tackle and show his inside foot. You could take the pass rusher who made the move, starts up the field to get the guy's inside foot back and get his shoulders turned so he can come inside. Or you can go to the defensive back that made it. So on that play, it's all in the eyes of the beholder. You know, I mean, how is a play a bad play? If it's a bad play for offense, it's usually a good play for defense.
Sure. Thanks so much.
Okay.
What a delight. You're a very special man. Thanks for joining me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing my sports interview, the classic interview with the great John Madden. He really was a most likable, fun, jolly guy and quite open and honest. And I particularly love the part when he talks about the one time he thought he may want to leave the broadcast booth and get back into coaching, thanks to Coach Jimmy Johnson, who he was broadcasting with at Fox at the time, and went to coach the Dolphins for a couple years. That's a great story. And I love John Madden's story about Don Shula, the only guy that he couldn't beat in golf, and then he beat him the last time they played, and he wouldn't play him again. He wouldn't give Shula a rematch. That's just classic. Well, thanks to Rob Labritz as well, who, boy, he's a friend, and I'm so proud and happy for him. He's worked a long time to compete and get into a situation where he can play the Champions Tour, and I love his mindset and the way he focuses and deals with distractions. It's a lesson we all can learn and apply to our own lives. Be sure to visit AnnLaGorey.com to catch up on my sports interview radio shows. You can hear any of them that you may have missed, and you can hear them at your leisure. And now I have the classic sports interview TV shows up on my website, too, that you can catch. So check it out at AnnLaGorey.com. My thanks to Mike Goodsound Production and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Remember, don't sit down and wait for the opportunities to come. Get up and make them. Words of wisdom from Madam C.J. Walker, an African-American entrepreneur, philanthropist, and social and political activist. Well, be kind, take care, and I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorey.